Hello, welcome to CarCast in Edmonds. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndre, here with Alistair Weaver from Edmonds.com. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Yes, very good.
It's been kind of a hectic couple of weeks. SEMA, which we talked quite a bit about, and LA Auto Show is ramping up very quickly. And for us, for you and me and a bunch of our colleagues in the industry, that means a press day. And I remember a few years ago, maybe more than a few years ago, press day was 2 days. I remember it being like a Wednesday and Thursday, and now it's just a Thursday. That's obviously because there's just far fewer presenting companies at the event. So Thursday is going to be kind of jam-packed with press reveals. A lot of it gets teased online now, right?
But yeah, we've seen most of it. And yeah, I'm off to, as we record this, I'm about to run to a hotel because I've got a 6:30. I'm on TV at like 6:30 in the morning or something. PR guys rang me up and said, "LA Auto Show, we've got a great PR show." So yeah, what time is it? Yeah, it's 6:30 a.m.
Yeah, it's always in the morning. But here's the thing is for those of you outside of California, our big freeway that takes us to the convention center that crosses from the beach to downtown LA is the 10 freeway. And it caught on fire. And this morning they basically said they need to fix it. Like they need to smash it. You can't use it. They need to start over. They need to smash portions away, demolish portions away, and rebuild it. And I don't know how long they think that's going to take. In my head, it's years. I don't know, but there's going to.
Well, they're saying they, 6 weeks, but like
they can't even file the paperwork in 6 weeks. There's no way if they say demolished a section of the freeway and then fix it in 6 weeks. No way, it's impossible.
It'd be 6 weeks in China.
If they mean like the center section of it or one of the standing pillars, cement pillars need to be repaired, then maybe 6 weeks. But they're not going to make a gap in the freeway like speed and have us all jump over it in the metro buses and then fix it. That's never going to happen in 6 weeks. It's not possible.
The thing that made me laugh, I got an email a couple of hours ago from the show saying, you know, looking forward to seeing you together, blah, blah, blah. And it said, you know, perhaps you could consider using the metro instead of driving. I'm saying that to people, especially car people in LA.
Yeah.
So you've got like the automotive world going to the car show. Then you're saying to them, get on public transport. Honestly, I think probably 90% of the people going to the automotive press day tomorrow never been on an LA metro.
So no, they probably haven't. But your plan of like getting a hotel room like tonight is smart because you have an early interview, but who knows what that traffic is going to be like.
That was it.
Like there's no way. You'd be up at 4 a.m. You'd be hitting the road at 4, giving yourself 2 hours to get there. And then maybe you make it, maybe you don't.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the public needs me, Matt.
Well, or some local news does.
Why will KTLA survive in the morning if I don't make it in time?
What are they going to do without you at 6 a.m.? I'm going to be there in the afternoon, so I don't know how long your day is going to be. But
you'll just turn up for the beer.
I hope so. That's kind of what I'm hoping for. So I'm actually going to head out tomorrow morning. We'll get into this on later shows, but finally I'm taking the Mustang Mach 1 over to Full Throttle Customs out here in Fillmore and putting it on the dyno and seeing kind of what's the baseline on this car with the, you know, with the initial twin turbo kit, low boost, 6 pounds, very safe tune, 91 octane. I'm sure there's plenty more in it, but I just kind of want to see where we are. And then maybe, you know, we can get this car up against one of your other cars on a U-drive.
Well, then you can bring it down the test track and we'll see.
We'll run
some proper figures on it.
But I'd like to get the dyno numbers ahead of time so we know what we're dealing with. But anyway, that's going to be exciting. So, it's going to be an interesting next couple of days with LA Auto Show and some of the press events and some of the debuts, which I'm looking forward to. Still kind of baffles me that Porsche is not going to be there at all. That whole Porsche room, which is always such a neat part of the LA show, is gone. But you know, still plenty to talk about.
We're back next week to discuss all.
So one of the things I wanted to get into was this EV test that Edmunds just put out. I saw the press release for it. This is kind of this is a very cool thing, kind of a very important thing, I think, is we've always been looking at EVs based off of range. And then there's been some discussion about efficiency, right? You've brought it up several times on saying something like the Rivian, for example, is not a very efficient platform. I don't want to say battery, right? But whatever the platform is, it still takes you forever to charge it. And that costs money. And nobody's really, there's no industry standard on charging efficiency and things like that. Now, all of these car companies go, hey, you could charge it in 10 minutes. You could charge it in 20 minutes. You could charge it in 5 minutes. You can get 80% very, very quickly. But on what? Like, who's generating that much power? And where are you, where are you generating that much power? But how do you create an equal playing field and test cars for this battery efficiency or charge time? Or what are the variables that we're looking at?
So this has been months of work. The reason I'm looking a bit grayer than usual as I'm on and propped up by caffeine is this has been a huge chunk of work over a number of months to pull this off. And it's really the kind of third part of the triumvirate of what we're about. So you have the Edmunds EV range test, which is how far it'll go on a single charge. As part of that, we've been measuring efficiency. So not only how far will it go, because that's dependent a lot on the size of the battery, because in simple terms, you have a bigger battery, you go further. But efficiency is a big component of that, because that's about how much electricity you're using, how much it costs, and then ultimately how much it, how long it's going to take to recharge as well. And so the third part of this trifecta, if you like, has been what we launched today, which is the Edmunds EV charging test. And this is all about measuring how long it will take you to replenish the battery. So in simple terms, if you're going on a family road trip, how long will you be parked at a DC fast charger waiting for your battery to refresh itself so that you can then get back on the road to recharge? So there's a lot that goes into it. So we partnered with an engineering consultancy called P3, and they test the charging speed. So basically that's plugging it into, in this case, a DC fast charger. So 350 kilowatts, which is about as fast as you can get at the moment. The Tesla's a little bit different because obviously they use a proprietary system, which is a little bit slower. And they're measuring a charging speed, but then we overlay that with our efficiency data. And the reason you need to do that is because what you're talking about is the time, not the size of the battery, it's the time that you need to charge in order to go a certain distance. So the way that we're describing this is miles per charging hour. So when you plug it into the fast charger, how many miles are you adding per hour? Because that's a metric that people can understand. It's similar to miles per hour. And then the second way of describing it, which we thought was important just because it's kind of easy for car shoppers to get their head around, is how many minutes does it take to charge 100 miles? So you're driving along, you plug your car in, and it will take X number of minutes to charge 100 miles.
Right. So I get it. So the two scenarios would be, I'm on a road trip and I'm going to stop. I have an hour stop before I need to be on the road again. How many miles can I add to my charge within that 1 hour? Am I going to get 100, 100, 110, 120? Am I going to get 80? I've only got an hour before I've got to be on the road again. How much range can I get? How much can I add to my range? And then the flip side is I'm on the road. I'm not going to make it. I have 100 miles left. I need 100 miles of charge. How long is that going to take me? So I can look at this from how much range I need or how much time I have available. Those are the two benchmarks.
Yeah, and it's also about, you're going away to Thanksgiving next week as we record this. And, in the old days, we didn't use to factor in how long we were going to stop at a gas station. Maybe a little bit if you're in like a super thirsty car. But generally speaking, it's like, okay, it's 600 miles. I'm going to stop once or maybe not stop at all to fill up my gas tank. And when I do, it's going to be 5 minutes and we're done. you know, with EVs, it's a little bit different. You've got to plan your route, think about where the charges are, think about how fast the charges are. We talked about this a lot on the show, and then think about how long it's going to take. So maybe that journey that you think is going to take you, you know, 10 hours might now take you 12 hours because you've got to recharge the car. And this is obviously one of the challenges with the EV adoption. So maybe it's good to look at some of the results. So the fastest car that we've measured is our Hyundai Ioniq 6. And okay, that charges at 868 miles per charging hour. So you add 100 miles in just 6 minutes and 54 seconds. Now, the reason the Hyundai scores so well is it's got a pretty sophisticated 800 volt charging system, but it's also a vehicle that's been optimized for efficiency. For people aren't familiar, the Ioniq 6 is that really kind of slightly odd looking sedan. It's super aerodynamic. It looks like nothing else on the road, and it's all been optimized around efficiency. So when you look at that, you've got like the in second place is the Kia EV6, which is basically the same platform as the Hyundai, but isn't quite as efficient. So that takes 7 minutes 48, 769 miles an hour. And then, you know, as you go down the list, first luxury vehicle, Porsche Taycan. The Teslas are good, but not great. Mercedes is scoring well. And then when you get down to something like the F-150 Lightning, which I know is close to your heart, Matt, because it's a big, comparatively inefficient vehicle, it's charging at 332 miles an hour and it takes 18 minutes. So it's taking nearly three times as long as the Hyundai, 2.5 times as long as the Hyundai.
Right. Okay. Now, you guys have to kind of wrap your head around some of the numbers being crunched here, because when we
I'm giving you a lot of information here.
But when we say, hey, the Hyundai Ioniq 6 gets 868 miles in an hour of charging on the fast charger, you can never get 868 miles because the battery would. It just means if you could charge unlimited capacity on that car, it would have been 868 miles in an hour. But the reality is it was the least amount of time on the charger, which was, like we said, like 6 minutes.
So our figures are based on the average from 10% to 80. And the reason we do that is because you never really run the battery down to zero. It's not good for the battery, but also you run the risk of being stranded. And then 80% is generally what almost all OEMs would advise you to charge to in order to prolong battery life. So for normal use, charge to 80%. For, you know, occasional road trips, charge to 100. So we're measuring the average speed from 10 to 80%. So you see this in Tesla. It's not a new concept. You see it in Teslas. When you plug your Tesla in, it will actually flash up in the display. You're charging at 250 miles an hour. And that's just how fast, basically, it's stuffing electrons into the battery to recharge it. So, I mean, I think the key thing is not to get necessarily too hung up on the miles per hour. It's about how long you're going to charge. You're going to be sat at the charger. Yeah. And, you know, if you're thinking about doing this regularly, these numbers start to add up. And this is on the fastest charger. So, of course, if you're on a slow charge, it changes. But now you're looking at, you know, 6 minutes versus, you know, the slowest car that we tested, which is using old school battery technology, the Chevrolet Bolt, 172 miles an hour. So it's going to take almost 35 minutes to achieve what they Ioniq 6, manages in 6 minutes. So that's a huge difference.
The Chevy Bolt itself, if you plugged it into that fast charger, the Chevy Bolt is slowing it down. The Chevy Bolt wasn't necessarily made to be charged into something that large, right? That powerful.
Because one of the metrics that we also pull is about the peak charging speed. So how much power can it actually pull out of the charger? In the Bolt's case, it's just 54 kilowatts, and that technology has now been made redundant. But even something like the Mustang Mach-E, which, you know, is a great vehicle in many ways, but that's taking 20 minutes to charge in a way that the Ioniq's taking 6. So we are seeing quite significant differences. One of the things that when we originally devised this test was, you know, actually, are we going to see much difference? And so, the reality is quite a bit.
So let's talk about what's limiting these. What makes one good? What makes one perform poorly? Do we know the answer to that? Is it battery technology? Is it software? Is it the hardware between the plug and the battery? Is it some sort of internal brain box? Is it some sort of onboard charger, or I won't even know what the term would be, but some sort of regulator for how much it can take, you know, like the car needs to do a few things. It needs to preserve the battery. It needs to not overheat, catch on fire. Like it needs all these safety precautions to do it. It's kind of like putting the catalytic converter on a gas engine, and it needs to, you know, and the tune of that car needs to do all of these things to make it as fuel efficient as possible. You know, we could probably get almost any gas engine car, put it on a dyno, custom tune it, not worry about emissions, and make way more power. But at the cost of, I'd say emissions, but probably at the cost of, to simplify it, the cost of miles per gallon. And go, we could, if we chop off a few miles per gallon, we can get a lot more performance out of it. And in this particular case, the car manufacturers need to throttle how fast it can charge, or build in enough hardware and software to make it happen fast, right?
Yeah. So what you're seeing as the technology evolves is firstly, a caveat: Jonathan Alfarland is our head of vehicle testing. He's a proper engineer. I'm not. So I could get myself in trouble relatively quickly here, but I know enough to be dangerous. So maybe we'll get Jonathan on a show in the future and he can, we can sort of geek out over this. But in simple terms, yeah, you have to have a charging infrastructure on the car. And there's been a lot of fuss made around 800 volt systems, which in simple terms meant that, you know, this was able to charge at a faster rate. You could stuff more electrons into the battery in the same time period. And what's sort of pleasing about this, and I think really interesting, is although it is synonymous with some of the more expensive luxury cars like the, you know, the Porsche Taycan, we've also seen it introduced on, you know, the Hyundai Kia Genesis. So Kia EV6, Genesis GV60, Hyundai Ioniq 5 and Ioniq 6, all of which are strong sellers. They're all basically using this same architecture and all are able to charge at a really rapid rate. And then if you look down at the Fords, for example, and this is what's sort of shown up in our data, they're not using the same level of technology. They're not charging as quickly. And it's also, once you get, so a lot of it's technology led. And then there's also getting into, you know, there's all sorts of tuning and refinement. And as we've seen in our data, a charging curve is not linear. When you plug it into a fast charger, you don't just sort of plug it in and get the same speed throughout. What you get is a curve that varies quite dramatically from vehicle to vehicle, because you tend to get the fastest charging when the battery is relatively empty, so a little bit more than 10%. And then as it starts to get more full, the charging rate starts to taper off. And above 80%, charging tends to slow right down. That's all about protecting the battery as it gets close to full. So there's a lot of technology goes into it. And one of the big parts, the one of the big reasons for doing this test was there is no, as you said at the beginning, there is no industry standard. So if I'm going to get out of my soapbox for a moment, what everybody does is say, at 15% of charge, we're charging at a million miles an hour. And the fact that the curve then drops off a cliff is irrelevant. Or people are saying from 30 to 60, we're charging at this rate. Or from 30 to 80, or basically whatever metric makes their vehicle look good is what's being quoted.
Right.
And what our test is trying to do.
That's what marketing people do, right? That's what marketing people do. So you brought up an interesting point. The car itself sort of throttles how fast it'll charge depending on how much it thinks it needs the charge. So when you put all of these cars up in this test, did you aim for some sort of parity at the start? Like everything's like maybe charged to 10% or 15% to start with, or And anything with a lower range, maybe everything had like 50 miles of range. Like, was there some?
No, everything is 10. Everything starts at 10% and charges to 80.
So that's it. You kind of got every one of these cars to roughly a 10% charge and then started the test.
Yeah, not even roughly. Like, this is the charging part of it was done by a P3, a really sophisticated engineering company that we partnered on this. Okay. And we've worked with them closely on this. So there's a lot of science that's gone into to that element. And then we layer on the real world efficiency test, which obviously we stand behind and been doing for quite a long time now.
How did you get 43 cars over at the same place?
Pardon? It's a lot of work.
43 cars over at the same. Obviously, you didn't do it all at the same time. You guys have been working on this for a while.
Yeah. I mean, obviously you can, you know, you're working with, you know, certain chargers and certain charging companies to normalize everything. There's a lot of science underpinning all of this, because ultimately it's our reputation, right? This is what we do, and there's a lot of people taking aim. And it went live this morning, and it's been really rewarding to see a really positive response to it. So that's been good.
So the next question I have would be, yes, all of these car companies. Not all of them, but many of them. Like, I remember Porsche, for example, when the Taycan was being announced, Monterey Car Week, they had the prototype, the concept there, cool looking car. One of the things they were saying was like, oh, it's an 800 volt system and you can really charge this fast. And, you know, if you had enough power, you can get it from, like you said, from 15% to 80% in a certain amount of minutes. Knowing that, are there any cars on this list that you think nailed it or like way missed the mark? Like, again, I'm not picking on Porsche, but if Porsche said Taycan goes from 15% to 80% in 5 minutes, but when you tested it, it did it in 4 or it took 10. Is there something there that stood out as sort of a bogus claim or a better claim?
Yeah, I mean, I should say that if anybody wants to see this, it's edmunds.com/charging. Yeah. And then that will take you to the table and you can sort of play around with this data all you like. I mean, as we've already mentioned, the Hyundais, the Kias, the Porsches, they were the standout performers. Tesla did pretty well, not great. Mercedes also did well. Tesla, Genesis is part of the Kia group, of course. Mercedes, okay. Tesla did okay, not great. Lucid was pretty good. We didn't quite, interesting when you look at the peak charging speed that they're claiming, 300 kilowatts, we weren't able to match that. We had a peak charging speed of 270.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking specifically.
Yeah, there's a couple of things. I mean, it's still impressive, but it's not quite what they're claiming. And then it's only really when you get down, the BMWs didn't do fantastically well, Volkswagens likewise did okay but not great. And then the Fords, both the Mustang Mach-E and the Lightning, you know, relatively disappointing. They weren't able to take advantage of the power of the charger. And then you get into things like the Rivian, which, although they can charge at a reasonable rate, not the fastest, but charge at a reasonable rate, the reality is they just don't have, it's just a big, heavy truck with a massive battery. So, you know, that takes 90 minutes to add 100 miles. So it's partly a function of it's not charging quite as fast as some, but also the fact that it just uses a hell of a lot of juice. And I was on the show, a few weeks ago, and we were talking about my experience trying to charge the Rivian on a road trip on a family vacation and what a disaster it had been. And, you know, it's just, if you want a big, heavy truck, it uses a load of juice.
Yeah,
I mean, it's the same with a gas truck. There's no difference. And the efficiency is not that dissimilar. But you just got to accept you're going to spend more time parked at a charger. You just are.
At the bottom of the list is Chevy Bolt, which is hampered by older technology. Do you think the Hummer would have beat that car or been worse than that car?
We haven't tested a Hummer. You're right.
There's only a handful of them out there. They only sold a handful. But the battery is so big, even with the best technology, it would just be a massive amount of power to charge that behemoth battery. And now trying to get to 100 miles, but, you know.
Yeah, the Hummer's got some quite fast charging technology, so it wouldn't be as bad as a Bolt for sure. But then, of course, it's really inefficient because it's a monster truck on the road.
It
so
is.
it's trying to get people. Sorry, Mike, go on.
I was going to say, how do we equate this to dollars at some point, right? There needs to be, I mean, not all, like gas stations, every gas station has a different price for the most part. Charging stations kind of do as well, but when can we start to figure out the cost? If we say the Hyundai Ioniq 6 was the most efficient to charge, you got the most amount of range, 6 minutes on the charger to get 100 miles. Well, you're paying for 6 minutes on the charger, right? You're paying because it's delivering the same amount of kilowatts to every one of these cars. So if you're on there for less time, you're paying less. Is that true?
Yes. And also bear in mind that fast chargers are expensive. You know, we talk a lot about OEVs are cost effective and everything else. If you charge them at home, yes, they are. If you've got a decent electricity plan. If you're fast charging them, then frankly, they're as expensive as a gas car. If you're just using fast chargers out on the highway to keep them topped up. So it does make a significant difference, because ultimately, you know, if you're asking the charger for twice as much power, it's the same as putting twice as much gas in your car. So it is a simple equation. That's where our efficiency test really comes into its own, because it's just saying, you know, this is how efficient the car is. This is the equivalent really of miles per gallon. And we naturally equate miles per gallon to cash at the pump. And it's only because, you know, to date, people are more familiar with, you know, plugging them in at home. So it's kind of lost in your electricity bill and you don't think about it the same way. But the more time people spend using fast chargers, they're going to see the dollar rate keep racking up and racking up and realize that this is actually, you know, significant sums of money, and that just as a big truck in the gas world is a lot more expensive than an efficient sedan or SUV, it's the same in the electric world. And the cost differential is just as much, if not more. The other interesting thing that came out of this is about charging losses, which is also a bit of a new concept. And we haven't gone big on this today, but we'll probably come back to it just because I didn't want to kind of muddy the message a bit. But like the Teslas are basically super efficient in the way that they effectively absorb the electricity. So charging loss is like spilling gas onto the forecourt. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
And you've got some really standout stuff, like the Polestar is charging losses were nearly 18%. So 18% of the electricity that you're paying for is not going into your car. You're just spewing it onto the forecourt.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Whereas with the Tesla, it's down at, where's my figures? It's down at like 0.7% on a Model S Plaid. So you're not wasting money. So there's a lot of like really interesting nuances that, to be honest, even we are starting to scratch the surface on. This is super new technology. It's super new tests, but there's a lot of stuff in here that's, if you're a bit of a geek like me, is really interesting. And B, it shows how much kind of BS is happening in the industry and how many people are making claims all over the place, which are quite hard to justify.
Well, like I said, I'm not trying to pick on the industry and go, everybody's making bogus claims.
It's not bogus claims. They're just, they're highlighting stuff that makes them look good.
Yeah, they're picking the best part of their results and bragging about it like anybody would do, right? Okay, so this is the first time you guys have done a test like this. So one of the questions I think is going to come up is, why do this test with the big fast supercharger? And of course, the answer to that initially, I imagine, is because this is in the, we're trying to address like the road trip issue is not the charging at home issue. This is the road trip issue. It's like you're going from here to Vegas or to San Francisco and you're planning your time. You need to add 100 miles of range, or you only got a half hour to charge. Like, what can you do on the road trip? But I think in the future, this would also be interesting to see how this compares on a, at one third, you know, like a phase two or.
Yeah. You know. Well, we actually already, to be honest, but we actually already quote that on us. So that's actually a much more simpler metric, because the way that a vehicle charges, if you just plug it into what we call level two, like a 240 volt system at home, is very different to how it fast charges. So we actually have that data on the site already. It's a little bit different. It doesn't require all the sophisticated testing that we're going through here.
it'd be interesting to see these charts side by side, that I'm looking at, because as you pointed out, the cars themselves will react differently. The software, the hardware reacts differently to how much power, how it's going to use it, you know, like the, you know, spillage, if you will, of that. Is like you said, the Polestar loses a bunch of the available charge eventually. It doesn't take advantage of it. It would spill it, like you said, like gasoline. But at 50 kilowatts, does it not do that? Right.
So I think what we should do, if we want to get really technical, I'm going to get Jonathan to come on the show before I embarrass myself with my limit of engineering prowess.
I totally agree. Like I like the engineering side of this thing. We should have that conversation. And I'm not trying to. I'm not trying to add 100 questions to this massive test that you guys have done. I'm just trying to, because we've never seen a test like this, and we're talking about new terms or things that, because there's no industry standard, I'm trying to sort of define it all. And yes, there's going to be questions. And it's like when we were making documentaries, it's a fantastic story about, you know, Paul Newman or Tommy Kendall. Good luck trying to tell it in 90 minutes. You're going to leave something out. So there's always going to be something left out. But I think this is an incredible amount of information. I think it's super useful. I think when you're looking for buying guides, when you're going to Edmunds or you're going to the LA Auto Show and you're looking at new cars and you're looking at range and how nice it is and that stuff, this is something that should be a part of that buying guide decision. Because this is going to affect your wallet.
And that's what we're trying to do here. You're right. I mean, we're getting a bit geeky about it, and you can sort of dig down. It's like a multi-layered approach. If you really want to, you can really dig into the data and draw all sorts of conclusions. At its heart, this is a measure of how much time you'll be spending sat at a charging point, sat at a charger, if you're on a road trip or out on the highway somewhere. And that's a really important metric. So what we're trying to say is range is super important. How far will I go on a charge? Efficiency is super important, because that's really a measure of how much am I going to spend, amongst other things. And then this charging test is a measure of how long is it going to take me to fill up out on the road. So when you put those three elements together, we feel that we've got we've got a really convincing proposition for consumers who are looking to buy an EV. And they're all data points that haven't been properly defined by the industry generally. And there's flaws in the EPA system of vehicle range. So we've just tried to say, look, it's an emergent industry. How can we, with the resources that we have and the expertise that we have, simplify this for the car shopper? And, you know, we believe that's the, you know, that's the value of these studies.
Yeah, I think it's good. I'm going to need some translation. This miles per hour, because it's such a common term, the miles per hour charging, because that number, it's looking at all these cars side by side, the number is relevant to me. But in the real world, the number isn't as relevant to me. This is just me picking on it now, being a suggestion. 868 miles of charge in 1 hour for the IONIQ 6. The real world is, instead of miles per hour, I want like miles for 15 minutes or 10 minutes or something. Yeah, benchmark. Because then in my head, I can go, oh, wait, what do I get in 10 minutes? You know, on
well,
this
that,
charger.
But that's being defensive for a moment. That's what we're giving you, Matt. That's why in the table, you've got miles to add, time to add 100 miles. Now, the reason, there's so much work gone into this.
Here's the other part of the table. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Okay. So the reason that what you're
average
asking
time
for,
100 miles. Yeah.
The reason what you're asking for is difficult as a comparative measure is because battery sizes are different. So if you say to me, how long will it take me to charge from 10 to 80% on a given car, we can give you and will give you that data point. But because battery sizes are different, it's not comparative. Because 10 to 80 to charge on a Rivian with a much bigger battery is naturally going to be longer than on a Model 3 with a much smaller battery. So the only way to come up with a comparative measure is to get is to give a sort of fixed amount of miles. In this case, 100
miles, right? Which is a good benchmark.
Which is
well,
not
right. On a Rivian, it's 25 or 30% of the battery range if you add 100 miles, and yeah. On something like an Ioniq 6, that could be, you know, and maybe it's, I don't know, 180 mile range. You're doing a lot more of the battery.
So what you've got is a comparative speed. And then we also dress it up as a comparative time to add 100 miles. So the speed is probably less about like visualizing, does this mean I add 800 miles? No, what it's saying is this is the speed at which it's capable of charging on average. But then we do give you this metric for time, because as you say, it's just something that as consumers, it's a little bit easier to wrap our head around.
Yeah. Well, listen, It's good data. It's super informative data. Makes me sad for my Honda, for my Ford Lightning. But aside from that, everything else is.
Wait, you see good. What you know, Matt, is now next time you sat there, you know, with Tammy, yeah. Like trying to charge your car late at night, you'll be able to look at this and say, Alistair told me so.
But I'm looking at the loss, and the Lightning is 5.6% loss compared to some of these other cars that are interesting. 8%, 10%, 9%, 11%. I'm like, I'm a little surprised that the Lightning was only, you know, was only 5.6.
Yeah,
so
they're doing something right. So yeah, and it's interesting that there are such big differences. And you know, as you'd imagine, we're already getting quite a bit of, you know, conversation. I'm sure the reason for launching it today, of course, was because it's LA Auto Show, and there's lots of people around tomorrow, so we can go and talk to people about it. So it will be interesting to see what the reaction is. I got a note back from Porsche already saying this is super interesting. You know, I'm sure Hyundai and Kia will be pretty excited by it, and others less so.
If anything surprised me on the list, well, the good and the bad. The good is Hyundai, Kia, Genesis. They've been crushing it with their cars, with their design, the whole lineup, and now proving themselves as being, in a sense, the most attractive EV platform, one of the most attractive EV platforms out there. That's great for them. A little surprising, but in a happy way. Little disappointed that BMW wasn't doing better. I expected good things from Porsche and Mercedes because they're high-end cars and you're paying a premium. Little surprised BMW wasn't more up in between Porsche and Mercedes.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'm sure if we come back, well, I'm sure in 5 years' time, we sit down and like analyze the latest results, everything's going to look very different.
Yeah. It's going to look different. You know, as you stare at this list and the amount of work that went into this thing, years from now, there's going to be the battery half-life and the similar tests and on used cars and going, oh, you know, now what's the best used EV for me to get, you know, like, hey,
well,
we
already do, like, we have a partnership with a company called Recurrent, which does a lot of looking at that, like, and actually we should talk about it another time. We actually quote some of that stats on the site as well about battery degradation over time.
Yeah.
So it's that's a whole interesting area as well. I'd say to people, it is important, but it's not like your iPhone where you have it for 2 years and then it's basically junk because, you know, it's not holding its charge anymore. It's a much smaller degradation than a phone or something like that. But it does add up over time. So maybe that's a conversation for a different time.
I mean, and it certainly makes sense. For a phone without a replaceable battery like an iPhone, they want it to last a few years, but then get you into a new phone. It's a harder argument to do that when you're spending $80,000 on, you know, or anywhere from from 40,000 up to 140,000 on a car. And there's such a used car market. Like you don't want to go, hey, we know it's going to last 3 years because that's the term of your lease. We want to get you into a new car. So the battery's going to take a shit 3 years. That's not really going to fly. So I don't know what the benchmark for the manufacturers is, probably something like 10 years to be optimal on the battery. And then some acceptable amount of degradation after that, but not trash. Is what I'm guessing they'll be going for, but I don't know. This is going to be interesting. Down the road, the recycle market and the purchasing of replacement batteries, whether it be from the manufacturer or the knockoff battery.
Yeah, particularly at a time when technology is moving so fast. Like we used to have a BMW i3 in the family, which car that we absolutely loved, and you know, if theirs was a future classic, then it's a fabulous little car. But then, you know, what does that look like in 20 years time?
You're right. If you grab your Porsche Taycan or your Hyundai and go, I got it. It's 10 years old. I want to replace the battery. Do you get a cheap knockoff battery that's not as good? Or will you be offered from the manufacturer or the aftermarket a better, more efficient battery that's going to do better for you and go, oh, you're going to get 10% more range because battery technology over the last decade has gotten better. You know, I wonder which direction it's going to go.
Just then you're going to need the whole technology to support it.
Yeah. You're going to need, it's going to be kind of interesting, but all right. Well, listen, as you said, edmunds.com/charging, right?
/charging. Yeah. Check it out.
Plenty of data, although I think we did a pretty good job in covering it. I don't know.
I think you're a bit geeky, Matt. I think the problem is that like we got too much into the weeds. At its headline, it's a really simple measure. All you have to do is look at the chart and say, I'm going to spend less time at the plug in that car than I am in this car, and we can show you what that equates to in terms of time.
Yes, for sure. We dove way deeper into this than we probably should have, but go to the website, look at the list. It'll make sense. And then you'll be able to sort of look at one car versus the other.
And if you want to geek out on all the data, it's there as well. And there's a whole Q&A about how we got here. Which the lawyers like.
What do you say? You're going to hop in the car and head out to the hotel and.
Yep.
Get ready for an LA Auto Show.
Get ready for another LA Auto Show. There's some interesting stuff. We just had a look at the Toyota Camry. I just did a film on that went live last night, actually. On if you look, check out the YouTube channel, that's going to be there. There's some interesting Genesis. I mean, Genesis is doing great at the moment. I think the Ioniq 5N, if I'm correct, is there. That's the kind
of
crazy.
That's like a high performance version. Could be like 600 horsepower.
Yeah, that's the sort of 600 horsepower. Ioniq 5. There's also Toyota's got this weird people I probably had it. Excuse me. Actually, I'm not sure the Ioniq 5N is going to be there. I thought it was. Maybe it's not now. But Toyota's also got this, but people have maybe slipped under the radar a little bit. They've got this kind of Crown brand, which Crown is a sort of is a really interesting, like age old car in Tokyo, in Japan. But then they had the Crown Sedan, which was like a slightly posher Toyota. And now they're unveiling the Crown Insignia. Signia, sorry, not Insignia. The 2025 Toyota Crown Signia, which is like somewhere between a Lexus. Sorry, somewhere between a Toyota and a Lexus. And it's a bit of a tough sell.
And it's an SUV, that one.
And this one's an SUV. So they're effectively creating a brand between Toyota and Lexus, which, let's face it, there's not a lot of space between the two to start with. So it's kind of like a little bit more market, slightly plusher inside, slightly different kind of look and feel.
But what is the order on the Korean brand? Kia, Hyundai, Genesis?
Well, the argument is like Kia and Hyundai kind of sit side by side. The original thinking was Kia was going to be more sporting, Hyundai a bit more, but that's kind of gone out the window. It's just that they do their own thing, use the same technology, and Kia and Hyundai are sort of sit alongside, and then Genesis is seen as the luxury version. So that's the kind of, well, they wouldn't like the Acura analogy, more like a Lexus to Toyota or Audi to Volkswagen is Genesis. And then Toyota has got Toyota now Crown and then Lexus.
Right.
But they're all a bit blurred.
Crown is a model, not really like a brand, right?
Well, that's what we originally thought. Now they've got two crowns.
But now they got two crowns. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they're doing these, but we're seeing it like with the Mustang nameplate, and we saw Bronco, we got Bronco Sport, we got Bronco, and then we got the variations, Raptors and all that stuff. But, and then they want their own showroom, and then Mustang, which has Mach-E. So maybe Crown can be a thing. I mean, listen, at one point Genesis was not really its own brand, and it sort of developed as its own brand, and it's doing very well that way. But listen, it could be kind of interesting.
Yeah, but there's plenty to see. It's still be it's always fun to go to auto shows. We talk about this a lot, but still enjoy it.
Yeah. All right. Well, what do you say? Let's wrap things up, and then I guess we will try to get a show in the can next week. I know there's Thanksgiving and stuff, but I'd like to get an LA Auto Show recap and see what we think after seeing and kind of getting, touching and feeling some of these new vehicles.
Yeah, we should make it happen.
We'll aim for that. We'll just check it out for next week.
Sounds good.
Again, it's edmunds.com/charging for all that stuff. Carcast Show is our website, although I think we're a little behind on the website. So as long as you're getting the podcast, we're good to go. We had so many audio issues when recording the SEMA shows that I know we're behind on episodes, and I apologize for that. And then it just took, I don't know, we just had like cable issues, recording issues, and you couldn't hear any of the interviews. And it's just been an incredible amount of audio editing, more than I've seen us do in 15 years. So, but we got some stuff. All right, guys. Thanks. We're going to wrap this up. Until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Carcast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on carcastshow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. Carcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit carcastshow.com.